Perfect. But Prabhupada had a complete understanding, a complete presentation, which he said is simple living, high thinking. So both things must be there. High thinking means not only that you think and you speculate in a very sophisticated fashion, but you practice Krishna consciousness. Because without practicing Krishna consciousness, without making things dharmic, even living simply is not going to make people happy. And in fact, you won't get your basic necessities, even if you try to live simply, without being dharmic. A perfect example of that is mentioned in the Ramayana, in the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. When Lord Ramchandra was in charge of Ayodhya and his kingdom, Ram Raj, as it said, the kingdom of Ram, actually, everybody lived happily, not simply because they had the necessities of life, but also because it didn't rain unnecessarily, didn't rain too much, didn't rain too little, it wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold, people didn't die prematurely, sons never died before their fathers, children never died, there was no infant mortality at all. In fact, the king was held responsible for maintaining the status quo in that regard. So much so that one time, there was a Brahmin whose son died. And the Brahmin brought the dead body to Lord Ram to complain. In those days, of course, the citizens had the right to complain to the king or to the leader at any time. Even in the modern times, there's some stories about after when Buddhism took over India, some of the kings, like the Emperor Ashok, there's stories about him, how he had a bell outside of his palace, and any citizen could come and ring the bell and make a complaint or get an audience. Of course, not in the middle of the night, like that story was told the other day about someone called Prabhupada in the middle of the night. How are you doing, Swamiji? And Prabhupada replied, you know, how do you think I'm doing? You know, get rid of this phone. So anyway, so with Lord Rama, it was like that. So this citizen came, and we can tell another story about how all the citizens had rights to see Lord Rama in a second. Anyway, so the citizen complained that my son is dead. It's because of your sinfulness. He accused the king of being sinful, Lord Rama of being sinful. It is your fault that my son has died. You have not executed any pious activities. I mean, it was almost like an insult. And Lord Ram accepted that. He said, something must be going on in the kingdom that's not proper. So in order to survey the entire kingdom, he called for this airplane called the Pushpaka Vimana. That Pushpaka Vimana had previously been taken by Ravana, and then Lord Ram took it from Ravana when he killed Ravana. And the Pushpaka Vimana was waiting for Lord Ram to call him, because Lord Ram had sent him away. Lord Ram didn't use the Pushpaka Vimana on a regular basis, just when he actually needed. So he called for the Pushpaka Vimana and went all over the kingdom. You know, what's happening? Something impious is occurring in my kingdom. So he was looking. And finally, he found, of course, Narada Muni had told him previously that there's some Shudra performing sacrifices and austerities. Because in the, it's interesting, the whole description, see if I remember it. In the Satya Yuga, only Brahmanas were allowed to perform austerities. In the Treta Yuga, Brahmins and Kshatriyas were allowed to perform austerities. In the Dwarpa Yuga, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas were allowed to perform austerities. Interesting, isn't it? And Kali Yuga, the only austerity anyone is allowed to perform is what? Sankirtan. So this is mentioned in the Ramayana. It's interesting how Kali Yuga is mentioned. But anyway, this is Treta Yuga. So it was prohibited for Vaishyas, and what to speak of Shudras, to perform austerities. So he came and he was flying around and finally saw this Tapasvi, the person who was performing tapasya. And he said to him, who are you? You know, what varna are you? And this man revealed that I'm performing these austerities, basically to go to the heavenly kingdom. That was the purpose. Performing the austerities to go to the heavenly kingdom. And I was born in a Shudra family. So Lord Ram, without thinking even for a second, he took out his sword and chopped the guy's head off. That's instant justice. Because to protect the citizens, the king has to be very strong in that regard. I mean, just like Lord Ram was very strong in killing Bali. Because Bali had taken his brother's wife and had mistreated his brother. So the king could actually pass judgment when he was absolutely sure that someone was doing something wrong. Anyway, so at that time, the Brahmin's son came back to life. Interesting, isn't it? So, you know, that, so if you want to be happy, you can't have people dying prematurely. Or like described here, you know, people getting cold, scorching heat. So as far as the rights of the citizen, this is another interesting story told in the Ramayana, that not only the word for citizen, of course, is praja, those who are born, not only did the human beings have a right to complain to the king, but even the animals had a right to complain to the king. So what happened is one day, a dog came to outside of the palace. He didn't come into the palace right away because generally the Vedic kings didn't keep dogs in the palace. It's not like nowadays in America you have not only the president and the first lady, you actually have the first dog. And even sometimes they stuff the dog when the dog dies and they put him in some museum like the Smithsonian Museum. This is Bill Clinton's dog, or of course Nixon's dog was very famous. What was his name again? No, but there was he gave a talk. He said, you know, I'm retiring from public life. I'm just going to be with my dog from now on. And I forgot that the name of that talk was named after the dog. And I forgot the dog's name right now. If anyone remembers. I forgot the name. So anyway, so at that time dogs weren't allowed in the palace. Nowadays even devotees have dogs at home. So anyway, so what happened is that the dog went to the outside of the palace and Lord Ram sort of sensed that someone was there to see him. So he sent Lakshman. He said, Lakshman, you go and see if there's someone there. And Lakshman went and he said, there's a dog there, and that's it. He wants to see you. And Lord Ram said, send him in immediately. So the dog came in, walked in, and the dog had a complaint. Lord Ram said, what can I do for you? You know, it's my duty as a king to take care of all the citizens. And the dog said, there's this Brahmin who beat me. And Lord Ram said, immediately call for the Brahmin. So the Brahmin was brought before Lord Ram and the dog. And this is actually a famous story. There's also a story like this in the Mahabharata. It's told. It's a very similar parallel story. Because Yudhisthira had the same thing. You know, a lot of dogs to come in. So the dog, the Brahmin was there, and Lord Ram said, What happened? You beat this dog? And the Brahmin basically made an excuse. He said, I was hungry. Hadn't eaten, you know. And sometimes when you haven't eaten, you have a bad temper because your blood sugar is down. I hadn't eaten, and this dog got in my way, and I just beat him. And then Lord Ram actually called for all these sages, including Vashishta, Javali, and all these sages to ask what he should do. Can you imagine that? I mean, such justice, dharma in the kingdom. You know, what should I do? And they all discussed this. And finally they asked the dog, and the dog, this is a famous story, and the dog said, you should put him in charge of the temple. Like make him a temple president. So, in charge of a mandali, you know, not really a whole temple, not a Hare Krishna temple, obviously. So Everyone was bewildered, and finally they asked the dog, you know, why? And Lord Ram said, you should ask the dog why he came up with something. Because everyone thought, you're rewarding this brahmana for his activities. And it turned out that this was not actually a reward, because previously the dog had been temple president. And the dog was responsible, whoever's temple president is responsible for certain, you know, there's sinful activities going on in your mandali. So because of that, he became a dog, because the king has to accept like 1/6, or a leader has to accept 1/6 if you're a leader. Like Prabhupada even said about GBCs, he said because Yamaraj made a mistake, you know that story of Mandapya Muni? Because Yamaraj made a mistake and had this Muni pierced by a lance, because some thieves had hidden it in his ashram, and the king by accident had convicted him. So, because Yamaraj is in charge of justice. Therefore, Yamaraj had to be cursed and take birth to the Shudra. And Prabhupada said, in that regard, that as far as the GBC, he says Yamaraj is one of Krishna's GBCs. And if a GBC makes a mistake, then he has to take birth to the Shudra in his next. So, we'll see you all in the next life. Somehow or other. If you take birth of the Shudra in Prabhupada's movement, it wouldn't be such a bad idea. In any case, this is how this sort of a kingdom was run. I mean, very strictly, if anyone violated the norms, the dharmic norms, even a Brahmin, because a Brahmin couldn't be killed. There's certain things you can't do to a Brahmin. Like a Brahmin violates the norms, you can't kill him or generally punish him, but you can give a punishment in such a way that it's not a punishment, or that it will give him the proper result, or allow him to understand that he's made a mistake and to rectify the dharma that was taking place. So this is actually a very important point. So that's the spiritual side. So on the material side, which Prabhupada deals with here, it's very interesting how people are acting in such a way as to basically eliminate their necessities of life. You know, basic necessities, in order to be happy, one has to have his basic necessities met too. Not just the spiritual necessities or the higher necessities, you know, intellectual necessities, but his basic necessities like good health, fresh air, and we really don't have those things to a large extent in different places. I mean, for example, and good healthy food. And for example, now in the name of modern civilization, probably doesn't mention this, but I'm adding this, they're modifying the food. You know, this is called GMO food. Because they want to produce more. Why do they want to produce so much food? They want to produce so much food is because the majority of food is used to feed animals. That's why they think they need more. I mean, Krishna's already providing enough. The earth could easily feed 10, 20, 30 times the amount of people we have on the earth planet. And if people ate the proper diet and didn't eat too much, and they ate the proper diet and weren't engaged in this sort of animal husbandry where they feed 20 or 30 times the amount of grains to the animal that would be required to feed the human being. And also what to speak of the water that's required for all this agriculture, or the deforestation, which Prabhupada does mention here, that occurs because of this animal husbandry. I mean, the lungs of the earth, which are basically the Amazon jungle, are being destroyed, even as we talk. I mean, to produce, I forget the ratio, but to produce like one hamburger, it requires like so much of an acre to be destroyed. And these big corporations like McDonald's and other corporations are responsible. But actually, we can say they're responsible. You know, it's easy to demonize them. But actually, people are responsible for buying the product. I mean, you can demonize the drug seller, but it's the person who buys it who is actually... That's one problem with the American war on drugs, isn't it? That they deal more with the supply side rather than the demand side. But you have to deal with both. You know, whenever there's a demand, there's going to be a supply. That's just life. You know, people want something, then it'll be produced. I mean, if people have money or opulent, like in America, or could borrow money, it's going to be produced. So you have to deal with that. And of course, the demand side can easily be dealt with by propagating Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada went to Chicago, and he was speaking to this lieutenant, and he said, "We can stop crime." Prabhupada was citing an article in, I guess, Time magazine or something like that he had read on the plane, crime and what to do about it. Prabhupada said, "We can stop crime. Just give us..." He was asking for certain buildings in Evanston, which is where our temple was in Chicago. So anyway, so that takes care of that. So as far as, you know, polluting the food supply with GMO food, there's been tests with this GMO food that they tested on rats, for example, and the rats die very quickly when they feed them, like GMO corn and other things like that. I don't know if any of you heard about this. And then they say, well, it's safe for human beings. But the rat is very similar. It's interesting how the rat biologically is very similar. That's why they use rats or mice to test different things. Somehow or other, you know, the immune system and the digestive system is very similar to human beings. And also they use monkeys too. So, through GMO food, through the pesticides, and talking about honey, which Prabhupada mentions here, now there's a scarcity of bees. The bees are dying all over the place. And so they can't produce enough honey. I don't know if any of you heard about this. So through, and then the air. We'll just speak of the air being unclean. I mentioned yesterday how one of my friends thinks that smog in Los Angeles is actually the beautiful fog or something like that. It's actually smog. And people are dying because they can't even breathe fresh air. You know, we're so proud of our technology and even here, you know, we have relatively fresh air here, but we got the highway pretty close. And so, you know, we're breathing so much exhaust fumes. And the technology, oil, for example, one drop of oil can pollute so many hundreds of gallons of water. Just one drop of oil. And so much of it is going in the ground, so much of it going in the air. So, in other words, people's basic needs are not going to be met under the present circumstances utilizing modern technology. So instead of their basic needs being met, then there's these perceived needs that technology attempts to fulfill. Perceived needs means, you know, I gotta have an iPhone, that's not a need. Or I gotta have a car, or I gotta have this, gotta have that, gotta have this. And these are not needs. We have to really drill down to find out what are people's needs and make arrangements in society, both material and spiritual arrangements, so that people's needs can be fulfilled, not desires or wants. And then people will be happy and they won't smell bad, which probably, it's a very interesting statement. They have a bad odor emanates from their bodies because of unclean perspiration resulting from eating all kinds of nasty things. And I experience this all the time when I'm flying someplace. You have to sit next to people and it's quite difficult. Yeah. That's perhaps the most difficult thing, because people smell really bad nowadays. And then they have to use, and then the worst thing is when they use the perfumes and the deodorants and everything like that. And that makes you even more nauseous because it's a chemical formulation. Anyway, on that happy note, we can have... What's that? Checkers, yeah, that was the Checkers thing. Thank you for that. The Checkers speech. The Checkers speech. Yeah, 1952. Like he was going back to his dog, Checkers.
Well,
And that was called the Checkers speech. That was after his dog. Thank you for remembering that. You made my day.